The meeting will come to order, please. And for moving the minutes, I know Representative Peterson, Sandra, you're just sitting down, but would you mind moving the minutes?
I move the minutes.
Representative Peterson, Sandra moves the minutes. Is there any discussion for corrections or additions? These are the minutes from February 9. Time is flying. Hearing no corrections or additions, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Members, today our first bill on the agenda is House File 2127. It is an adventure for us today into the world of disrupted learning as we look at digital learning, online learning, blended learning. And Representative Myra has this bill, and so I will move House File 2127 to be before us. And I believe, Representative Myra, you have a delete everything that you'd like to offer.
Yes, I have H2127DE4.
Representative Myra moves the DE4 amendment. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And now your bill is in the order in which you want it. Representative Myra, proceed to explain the DE4 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the first page, line item 121 through 125 talks about a requirement for students to have at least one digital course credit for graduation. This would be for students that the effective date would be for students that would be graduating in 2016. On page 2, there is technology strategies, all colleges and universities to approve by the Board of Teaching to include in their teacher preparation skills for digital and blended learning. And further on, more staff development in digital learning and blended learning. On page 4, is the addition of the definition of blended learning. On page 6 are some changes to give more flexibility for staffing. At the bottom of page 6, line 6.27 through 6.33 are some addressing some issues brought forward by the legislative auditor's report. Spelling out the timeline for review and approval. On page 7, 711 through 718 talks about the renewal process and the initial term and the renewal term. Line 7.27 through 7.29. This was a change to tighten up the language. It was a little bit misleading earlier on. Page 8 discusses the Digital Learning Advisory Council and their a commission to develop a catalog of digital learning content that is aligned with Minnesota academic standards. Section 10 on page 9 talks about the Digital Learning Advisory Council issuing a report at the beginning of next session with its findings on review of current statute. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Myra. And the motion will be committee members to move House File 2127 as amended to the General Register, recommended to pass into the General Register. So with that, let's hear from your testifiers, Representative Myra. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, we have a question, Representative Norton.
Yeah, just to your motion, Madam Chair, as I was looking and listening to Senator Nelson talk in Rochester about this, and she's carrying the other side, there is a fiscal note, and so I'm wondering why is it going to finance?
Representative Myra, would you like to address that?
And maybe it's the DE4, I'm not certain.
Have you been told there's a fiscal note? Representative Myra.
I have been told that there's a very small fiscal note. We also talked to the chair of the Education Finance Committee, and he said he didn't want to look at it.
And I think it's different language from the Senate, for one thing, in the DE4. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Even if it's a penny, it needs to go to finance. And this then will go together in conference committee with a bill that is in the Senate that has a bigger fiscal note. This is unprecedented to have a finance bill not go through finance. And I strongly object, and I would move that this bill go to finance, and I would like a roll call.
Representative Greiling has moved. Do we have to do that right now, Representative Greiling?
Madam Chair, that would be normal procedure. If we're going to follow abnormal procedure again, I guess you could do it whenever you want during the committee.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Well, we're going to continue, and we'll do a little bit more research on this comparison between the Senate file and the House file. So we'll find out. But Representative Greiling does have a motion on the floor, and we will vote on that at the appropriate time. Representative Myra, your testifiers, please.
Madam Chair, my first testifier is Ms. Staker. If she would come forward, please.
Welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Heather Staker. Madam Chair, Representative Myra, and members of the committee, I'm so honored to be here today and appreciative of the opportunity to talk about something that's near and dear to my heart, and that is how to channel innovation to greater success in the education sector. I work at InnoSight Institute, a nonprofit think tank based in the Bay Area of California, and we focus on innovation and how to use innovation to improve vexing problems in healthcare and education. If you think about it, some of the problems that we face in education are fundamentally problems of making an innovation more successful and predictable so that we're not just flying by the seat of our pants, unsure of whether or not the risks we're taking will prove to be successful. So how do we channel innovation to higher quality and greater success rates? Clayton Christensen of Harvard Business School is the founder of Innovation Theory. He, along with Michael Horn, authored a seminal book called Disrupting Class that talks about how disruptive innovation is poised to change the way that we think about the education sector going forward. Disruptive innovation is the process that takes a sector that before was characterized by being very complicated, expensive, hard to customize, inaccessible to some, and makes it customizable, less expensive, more accessible, more convenient. Let me give you an example. If you think about the computer industry, it started out in the 1950s with these huge mainframe computers. They were like $2 million. They required complicated, sophisticated engineers to run the data sets. Along came mini computers. These were maybe $200,000. A little bit less space, 1,500 pounds, as opposed to the mainframes that would have taken up this entire room. Still complicated, but less so. They were a disruptive innovation. Well, along came the personal computer, maybe $2,000 price point, much less complicated, much more accessible to a broader portion of the population. And then how many of us have a smartphone or a handheld in our pockets right now? So that's the process of disruptive innovation at work, the process of taking something that was complicated, inaccessible, inconvenient, and turning it into something that was more accessible. That pattern, once you see it, is identifiable in sector after sector. It typifies the automobile industry, as you see the movement from the Ford to the Toyota to the Hyundai, and then the Chinese automakers are on the horizon. It pervades government as well as nonprofit sectors. This is not only a pattern that we spot in commercial enterprises. So, for example, in higher education, whereas students most used to be educated primarily through state universities, we now see that 50% of American adults in a higher education are educated through community colleges. That's the process of disruptive innovation at work. And now the growth rate of online learning in post-secondary education is 15 to 20% a year. So that's the process of disruptive innovation in higher education. I submit to you that in the K-12 sector, we are seeing the phenomenon of a disruptive innovation at play with the introduction of digital learning or online learning in the K-12 space. Let me tell you why that seems to be the case. First of all, it's following the classic disruptive pattern. That means that it's taking root in areas of non-consumption. Typically, when a disruptive innovation gets its start. It begins in an area of non-consumption where the alternative is literally nothing. True to form, digital learning has also taken root in areas of non-consumption, dropout recovery, credit recovery. 40% of high schools in America do not offer advanced placement courses. And sure enough, that's where we're seeing online learning taking root. 25% of high schools in America do not even offer advanced courses higher than geometry, algebra 2, honors English. These are some of the advanced coursework where we're seeing digital learning play a part, offering an alternative to students who otherwise have the alternative of nothing at all. It's hard to beat. It's pretty easy to beat that. Also, dropout recovery, credit recovery, the 15,000 students in Minnesota who should have graduated last year but didn't due to dropout. Those would be the students that would probably preliminarily be most attracted to the online learning. It's following an S-curve pattern. It began as a slow phenomenon, and it's quickly ramping up such that right now we're seeing that by 2019, it looks like about 50% of all high school courses will be delivered online. Quite a stunning growth rate. So the question then, as we see this rapid growth rate, the S-curve pattern, where it begins slowly and it eventually hits its inflection point where it starts to really take off, the question on my mind is this a good thing? We see it happening. We see the numbers. Are we happy by this, or are we scared of it? One thing to think about as you consider the disruptive innovation is that they tend to make the experience in whatever sector it is more customizable. And that's really one of the main beauties of digital learning, is that in the traditional system, which was sort of factory-based, students were processed in batches through the system, moving as a class with a teacher and the 30 students. The interesting thing about online learning is that it allows for greater customization, greater personalization, so that students can learn at their individual pace and along their individual pathway. And that's one of the things that the technology can allow to happen. Another phenomenon that's occurring that's leading to the improvement of digital learning is that it's starting to blend into traditional brick-and-mortar facilities. So whereas digital learning used to be completely a distance phenomenon, where students were learning and the teacher and the maybe they were even learning from home or a remote environment and all of the curriculum was online and at a distance, what we're seeing is that the curriculum is starting to blend into a brick-and-mortar setting, so that a student would attend a traditional school but then have some digital coursework or some digital supplementation. And we think that that trend will continue. It makes sense if you think about it that not all students could be homeschooled or work in a remote environment. So we think that there will actually be a leveling off of the growth of full-time virtual schooling, and that more and more students will start to be learning in brick-and-mortar settings with some online elements. Blended learning is a big trend to take note of. Blended learning and digital learning offer some interesting opportunities for teachers and for students. For example, it offers the opportunity of new flexibility for teachers. There's a school in Yuma, Arizona called Carpe Diem Collegiate Middle School and High School, and they have a central learning lab where the students do some of their coursework online. And then around the periphery of the classroom, there are face-to-face teachers that offer as-needed support. They do workshops, they do small group experiences, they do individual tutorials. It's a new way of thinking about classroom setup. And interestingly, with their 6 face-to-face teachers, 273 students, they're actually able to give the students more individual attention than in the traditional setup. Second example, KIPP LA, the Empower Academy in Los Angeles, they have a station rotation going on with their blended learning, such that the students rotate among 3 stations. They do online learning, and then another group rotates to the teacher for face-to-face instruction, and then another group is working on projects or worksheets or individual tasks. That kind of a station rotation allows this teacher to work individually or in small groups with clusters of students while the other students are engaged at the right precise spot in the curriculum for where they are. It's an interesting new model that requires a more flexible staffing paradigm. Third example, in Detroit, there's a school that has disaggregated the teacher model, basically unbundled it, so that instead of one teacher doing all of the work, her work would be divided into 4 different types of faculty: the rigor faculty that offer the content expertise, the relationship faculty that are the face-to-face mentors, the relevance faculty that find applicable internships, and then the the discipline faculty that take that piece out of the equation. It's a new way of thinking about the teacher role, potentially one that could allow specialization so that the content experts offer that, while the relationship experts really are the ones who mentor the students along. Mm-hmm. Right. I just want to close with a thought about the great responsibility and opportunity that's before this esteemed committee today. It strikes me that in the factory-based system that has typified our school system for over 100 years, we've really regulated ourselves based on inputs. That was the way that worked best, and that's how factories tend to operate. We thought to measure ourselves in terms of things like seat time, in terms of student-teacher ratios, in terms of teacher certification, some of these input factors. The interesting thing about online learning is it gives us an opportunity to think about the world differently and admit that we don't know exactly how the innovation will best take shape. We're at the beginning of an interesting new era. But we do know very certainly what we want from our students and what our highest expectations are for them. We have a clear sense of what we want our students to become and what we want them to achieve. And so if we stop thinking in terms of inputs and focus instead on what we want them to become and what we want the outputs to be, and then clear the space for the innovations to occur to allow to get to those outcomes, we're in a better place policy-wise. So I would suggest that as we consider this bill today, some of the things about it that are so commendable are the shifting focus from input-based regulation to output-based regulation. It's starting to think in terms of how do we clear the space as policymakers to allow the innovation to bubble up in the way that's most appropriate to reach the outcomes that we all share and hold dear for our students. And so thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Staker. Representative Benson, you had a question for...
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
First of all, could we put those back up again,
yes,
please? The last one and then the one before, I'd like to ask you a question or two about, if I may.
Hopefully it will come back up.
We have a blank screen, Ms. Staker.
Yeah, I'm working on it here. There we go.
Thank you.
On the second bullet point, could you define what you mean by certifications in the second bullet point?
Sure. So as we think about staffing, one of the things that is interesting about the new models is that potentially if we were to have a teacher that was really an excellent physics teacher but didn't live within the state of Minnesota, if a student were able to access that teacher online, then that might be a good thing for a student who otherwise wouldn't have a physics course. So when we think about traditional ways of teacher certification and the requirements that they be potentially Minnesota-based or subject to rules that might eliminate possibilities that weren't even possibilities years ago. So decades ago, certifications were probably the appropriate way of thinking about regulating quality. But now that the universe has opened up such that a student here could access an expert really anywhere, that old paradigm maybe is a misfit for some of the opportunities that are on the horizon.
Representative Benson?
Are there other professions that you would say certification is no longer necessary, for example, medicine?
Ms. Staker?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily suggest that it's unnecessary, but I think that when we think about it in terms of geographical boundaries.
Well, I mean, not. So you're talking about a national certification then? Is that what you're referring to?
I think what I'm talking about is a certification that's based on performance. So a certification that's based on accomplishing a set of objectives as opposed to a certification that's based on a priori hoops that the teacher has jumped through. So it would be a different way of thinking about it than in medicine, where the doctor would receive his degree and be qualified for becoming a doctor right from the start. For teaching, I think that there's an opportunity to think about it in terms of success and allowing someone who's maybe a Nobel laureate or something from a different area to have the opportunity to be a content expert and show their stripes and then become a certificated.
Madam Chair, this is a rather complex issue that you're proposing.
Right.
For example, someone with a PhD, I would assume, had certification in the area in which he or she was to instruct.
Yeah, and
Ms. Staker.
I think the The legislation before us today doesn't delve into this issue yet, so we don't have to worry about it. But I think it's on the horizon, the concept that eventually we'd want to liberate some of the constructs that we had before that bind us and tether us to geographics requirements and time-based requirements, and instead think about it differently.
Madam Chair, yeah, that's why I said I assumed that you were talking about some type of national certification or some kind of a national evaluation of instructors. Can we have the one before? I would say while you're looking for that, Madam Chair and members, that if we're to go into this kind of program, then these issues of certification are relevant right now, not somewhere down the line. But anyway.
Well,
Ms. Staker.
I'm sorry. I do think that we can move forward with the items in the bill, such as teacher training and calling for a commission to review digital learning, some of those issues now as a groundwork. But down the line, we are finding that some of the states and some of the communities who are far down the road with implementing blended learning programs are feeling a little bit hamstrung by regulations that circumscribe the type of teachers that they can hire.
Representative Chair, I would like to look at this chart because I'm not quite sure what it means. We have a teacher and then we have other faculty. Are those individuals teachers as well? And specifically the one on relationship faculty, would you fill us in on what that means in practical terms?
Sure. So let me give you an example. There's a high school in Detroit called Cornerstone Health High School, and they've decided to disaggregate their faculty model. So what they've done is they've chosen rigor faculty who are online teachers. They work at a distance. They aren't on campus, and they are subject matter experts, so that the school can hire whichever teachers are the best qualified in that subject area to teach that subject but aren't necessarily on campus. Those teachers can also accommodate a larger class size because they're working virtually. But then, because we all understand in our hearts that kids need face-to-face loving mentors, they have these relationship faculty that are the face-to-face experts that offer support, that take the kids from their freshman year of high school all the way through actually until their sophomore year of college to make sure that they get that mentoring. And those are on-site, face-to-face credentialed teachers. The relevant faculty are volunteers from the community that help find internships in the healthcare profession, and then the discipline faculty are a different set of administrators.
Representative Benson.
So are relationship faculty similar to what we call counselors today?
Ms. Staker.
I think that they would be similar in that role, although because the rigor faculty are at a distance, there probably is a little bit more crossover with the counselor type of person dipping into understanding exactly where the student is with their coursework.
Representative Chair, well, I'd just like to probe a little further. So we have a student who is with... Well, the rigor faculty are not present physically then necessarily.
Right.
So when the students are learning and they are sitting at their computers or whatever they're doing, what is the human interaction that's going on there? Are the relationship faculty present all the time or some of the time?
Ms. Staker.
What?
The relationship faculty would be on campus all the time, interacting with the students, perhaps on whatever schedule works best for the students. The rigor faculty would not interact on a face-to-face basis typically, so it would be more like a virtual school setup. They would interact online. So there are so many technologies now that allow for the web conferencing, either synchronous instruction where they're learning face-to-face, but in real time over the internet, or asynchronous where there would be recorded lectures and that type of thing. And I would be happy to provide you more information with this just for the sake of time so that we can continue to move on with the...
I'm sure you're being very generous with time. I just have one comment.
Last question. That
in the 1980s, I wrote an advanced placement course, and we taught it live online between my district and two others that did not have advanced placement at that time, and we had satellite classrooms in the other two districts. It turned out to be very, very difficult to interact with those students, even though it was live, and they could see me, and I could see them, and so I would just suggest that I can see how it would be helpful for a district to have a teacher-student ratio of 45.5 to 1, and I can see the financial benefits for a district. I guess I'd have to see the process in action before I would be convinced that we've moved forward in
Representative
the educational
Benson,
process.
Representative Benson, you, there's a system that Cisco has developed where no longer is it the kind of interactive that you and I experienced when we were teaching online. But there is direct communication back and forth. Yeah. So we're moving in the area of technology very rapidly, and it's just a matter of time. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Myra, I, having read when it first came out, getting a complimentary copy, as probably all of us at the time on Education Committee did, Disrupting Class by Clay Christensen and also our own Kurt Johnson, and I was very excited by it. I'm happy with the legislative auditor's report last year, and I wish you had not added this teacher component to this bill, because I think that we could have a much clearer and crisper conversation on online learning, which I think is the future in a lot of ways. Governor Pawlenty a while back proposed your idea of everybody must take one course. My own daughter, when she went to college in another state, we thought Roseville schools were very progressive, but she found she was the only student in her advanced placement section at college who hadn't had the online research experience. And so I think it's really time for us to push for this. But I think it really cobbles the discussion of your bill to add in yet another another teacher component that's very complicated. I just said to NPR yesterday when we had Representative Kiefer's bill on the floor, I said, it's, you know, as long as we had the CAF amendment that we put on in this committee, I thought it would fly right through, be unanimously supported. I didn't know Representative Biskins had his amendment to have that, to rehab that discussion. But I said, it depends on the day here at the legislature if we want highly qualified teachers or we think almost anyone can teach. And it seems we've gone to the second here today with getting back to the almost anyone can teach if they have the knowledge, the content knowledge. And, you know, I think that the professional part of teachers and the part that students so need today are the character models of teachers and the qualities of dealing with the whole child that so many don't get at home as we would like, just because of parents having to work, two parents working, and they can't afford to stay home like I did with our children. And so I'm very concerned that we would separate out discipline and relevance and relationship and rigor, because I think the best teachers do all of those things, and they know the whole child, just like the best parents. You wouldn't have one parent to discipline and one to relate to the child and one to be the one that knows all about parenting. It just seems it's too many hats. So I'm interested to learn more about that, but I would urge you to get rid of that part in this bill so you could have your bill advance without so much controversy.
Representative Myra.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, are you referring to page 6?
Madam Chair, Representative Myra, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Myra, any comment on that?
Well, one of the things that reason for carrying this is I am so excited about the whole concept of blended learning. When I was out in San Francisco, they shared with us how it can free a teacher from content delivery and assessment and really allow teachers to focus on that one-on-one time, mentoring with students, and really strengthening their effectiveness in the classroom. And so that's one of the main reasons why I wanted to carry this bill. I think the possibilities are really quite incredible. And you referenced to the requirement for one credit in a digital learning class. And again, I have three college students, and you know, they got to college, and there's a lot that is expected of them to be able to maneuver through Moodle and to take tests on online and to chat online and submit homework, and we really need to allow our students to be prepared for both college and career. So I thank you for your comments.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question before I make a comment is there anything currently in law that disallows districts from being able to do any of the things that you're suggesting?
Representative Myra.
I don't believe so. What we are wanting to do, though, is just to start the language, the discussion, and get it going. One of the comments about the disruptive class, it talks in there about the estimate that 50% of our high school classes will be digital by 2019. That's just around the corner, and I think we really need to get that discussion going. I don't see this bill as completing the discussion. I see this as beginning the discussion.
Representative Norton.
Thank you. I guess one of the things that I'm responding to is a lot of this is already happening. I live in Rochester. We have IBM. They've been very active in trying to engage our community in this. And you can go to any of our buildings, actually not just in Rochester, but all of a sudden southern Minnesota. And I would say blended learning is happening in most, if not all, of the classes already. I think we always talk about letting the market do its thing. And I think this is an example where you're trying to force something that's already happening and create an additional mandate. And the one thing I've heard from everyone back home is allow us more local control and please don't give us another mandate. And so since there isn't anything prohibiting this type of thing from happening, since we already have some wonderful examples of blended learning, and I think one of the things that perhaps excites all of us, and I appreciate the enthusiasm of your presentation, but again, it wasn't a lot new, is that we get these kind of catchphrases, blended learning or disruptive innovation, which we've been hearing in the in everything we've gone to for the last year, that we get excited about the new name, but the action is happening anyway. And so I guess I'm concerned about adding new mandates. I'm concerned about the message that I keep being given back home: no more mandates, local control. And I would say I think this is a great discussion, and I'm glad we're having it. I would rather have it as kind of an informational hearing and raise the issue publicly so that we can be talking more about it and not moving ahead with legislation as you've crafted in here. So I guess those are my initial thoughts, and I look forward to hearing more.
Well, members, keep in mind that part of this is a response to the OLA report that we received, and the other is that we are updating our language and statute. Your next testifier, please, Representative Myra.
Thank you.
And thank you very much, Ms. Spinker.
My next testifier is Dr. Hovenitz.
Welcome to the table, Dr. Hovenitz, and please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Myra, members of the committee, for inviting me to talk in support of digital learning. My name is Christy Hovanitz. I am a senior policy fellow for the Foundation for Excellence in Education, a nonprofit education organization founded and led by former Governor of Florida, Jeb Bush. I'm here today to represent the Digital Learning Now initiative with the following statement about digital learning. Governor Jeb Bush has a vision for education. He believes that education should prepare students with the knowledge and skills to succeed in the 21st century. Essentially, education should give the young people their ability to achieve their dreams. Sadly, that's not the case. Only about a third of our students graduate from high school ready for challenging college and careers. About a third of our students graduate but need remediation, and about a third of our students don't graduate at all. Governor Bush believes that digital learning is essential to the success of achieving this education vision. Digital learning allows education to be customized for each and every student in Minnesota as well as across the nation. Customization is a game changer. A decade ago, customization for 50 million students across the country would not be possible. Today, technology has the power to make that dream become a reality. When students can learn in their style, at their own pace, all students will achieve. Students who are struggling will get the time and support they need to master the material. High-achieving students will engage and accelerate their learning. All students win. Digital learning is also a catalyst to transform education to a student-centered, achievement-based system. Technology provides us with the data to differentiate instruction and tailor instruction to each individual student. Data takes the guesswork out of instruction and can tell teachers exactly where students need to focus their efforts, which makes them more effective educators. When students learn at their own pace, there's no need for social promotion. Students can advance when they master the material, but not before. No student will get bored, and we won't be leaving students behind. With data, we can make more informed decisions about the quality of content, courses, and instruction. and the ability to customize, we can fund education based on outcomes rather than inputs and attendance. More students will achieve the skills to succeed, and taxpayers will get a better return on their investment in education. Digital learning has three basic components: hardware, digital content or software, and people. First, we really need to modernize our delivery system. Technology has changed every aspect of our lives except education. Imagine if its incredible potential was unleashed in the schools. It does not mean we are going to change what students learn, just how students learn. This means replacing hardcover books with hardware. That can be a desktop or a laptop, an iPhone or an iPad, a notebook, a netbook, or a Google Chromebook, and new options are available every single day. Technology can either enter the classroom in a blended setting or transport the classroom into a virtual or online setting. But hardware alone is not digital learning. Software and content are important as well. New learning technologies are interactive and adaptive. They engage students and can automatically adjust to the needs of students. These technologies can capture data so that teachers can tell where students are excelling and where students are struggling. Now imagine if we had the iTunes or Amazon of education, where teachers could access a wide array of courses, curriculum, lesson plans, instructional strategies, and objects related to our statewide standards. The combination would make education more engaging and far more productive. Add a mechanism to measure and track student performance along the way, and you have the ability to accelerate learning and reverse failure before it's too late. All students will learn to read. All students will be able to do math. Students will move ahead when they're ready for moving to the next level of learning, whether it's a bit faster or a little bit slower than peers their own age. Third, digital learning will transform the teaching profession. Technology will not replace teachers, as some people might fear. In fact, technology will empower educators with the ability to customize education and will literally extend their reach to reach more students at a deeper level. Some teachers will become more like coaches, providing one-on-one instruction and direction to students, and other teachers will probably become more like content experts that support both teachers and students. To achieve this vision, though, we need to be willing to change. We cannot layer technology on the current schools the way they are today. We need to rethink what schools look like, and we need to be open to alternative staffing plans and maximize the skills of the great teachers we currently have in the classroom. Digital Learning Now is a nationwide effort to harness the power of technology and to transform education for the 21st century. Back in 2010, Governor Bush enlisted the support of former Governor Bob Wise of West Virginia, and together they created the Digital Learning Council. This council was comprised of a diverse group of over 100 leaders in education, government, philanthropy, business, technology, and policy think tanks. The group participated in over 40 virtual policy discussions to determine what is it that can transform education into the digital age. The Digital Council developed the 10 elements of high-quality digital learning, which was released in December of 2010. The 10 elements, I think you have in your packets, the 10 elements of high-quality digital learning established a framework for 21st century world-class education. The elements focused on three general areas: providing customized personal learning for all students, ensuring robust offerings of high-quality education options for effective instruction fueled by great teachers, and providing the infrastructure that can support and sustain digital learning. In October of 2011, Digital Learning Now released the roadmap to reform. To jumpstart the Digital Learning Now initiative, all 50 states were assessed to the alignments of the 10 elements. Minnesota achieved 47 of the 72 measures, as in the report card that you probably have in your packets as well. And right now, this assessment is based on policies or inputs or things that will lead to success. Our next goal is to evaluate all states based on enrollments or outputs as a measure to success. And then finally, in a few years, once some of these policies and procedures are in place, to be able to focus on outcomes or achievement of success. Minnesota can lead the nation in advancing digital learning, and we believe digital learning is the key for rising student achievement. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of digital learning today.
Thank you, Ms. Havanitz. Our next testifier is from the Office of the Legislative Auditor, Joe Voss. Welcome to our committee, Ms. Voss, and please say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
For the record, my name is Joe Voss, and I'm with the Legislative Auditor's Office. We completed our evaluation on K-12 online learning in September 2011. And we conducted most of our research during the 2010-11 school year. And at that time, there were 24 state-approved online schools. These schools were set up and administered by individual school districts, individual charter schools, or groups of school districts known as online learning consortia. During the 2009-10 school year, there were about 12,000 students taking courses from these 24 online schools. 8,000 of these students were taking courses full-time. About three-quarters of the students were in grades 9 through 12. So that's kind of the background for what I'm going to lead into now, which are our concerns about online learning. I want to say up front that we like online learning. We think it offers a lot of advantages to students, to parents, to school districts, to teachers, but we do have some concerns. And those concerns, concerns about student performance, and those concerns focus largely on full-time online students. First, we looked at how many courses online students actually complete. And we found that in the 2009-10 school year, full-time online students completed less than two-thirds of the courses they registered for. And this was about a 20% drop from the course completion rate just 3 years earlier. Second, we found high dropout rates for 12th graders who were enrolled in an online school full-time. In the 2009-10 school year, 25% of the seniors taking online courses full-time dropped out by the end of their senior year. And that compares to an overall 12th grade dropout rate of 3% for traditional schools. Third, we found problems with standardized test results in math. Full-time online students scored lower and made less progress over time on the state's standardized math tests than students did statewide. In addition to the student performance problems, we found problems with the Department of Education's performance. We found, first of all, that the department was not processing and reviewing new applications or applications for new online schools in a timely manner. We looked at department activity over an 18-month period from January 1st, 2010 through June 30th, 2011, and found that the department had reviewed only 3 of the 8 online new school online applications that it had received. We also had some questions about the way in which the department reapproved online schools that had already gotten their initial approval. We found that the department's renewal process, which schools had to go through every year, did not look at all on school or student performance. Basically, schools had to refile their initial application every year and update it. And the initial application basically just collects a lot of information on processes, inputs, policies, procedures, things like that. Nothing on results. And the third, we found that the department wasn't dedicating enough staff to online learning. Since August of 2009, the department hasn't had a full-time staff person devoted to online learning. And the department has sort of divvied up online responsibilities among other staff members who have other responsibilities. So we think that overall that the state needs a more timely and strategic approach to online learning. First of all, we recommend that the legislature adopt specific time frames for the Department of Education to process and review applications for new online schools. We also recommend that the Department of Education approve online schools for a longer period of time, say 3 to 5 years. And as part of its reapproval process, the department should require the school districts or the charter schools or the learning consortia that set up the online schools in the first place, require them to submit some sort of performance evaluation as part of the review of the reapproval process. We also think that the department should dedicate more staff to online learning. And if the department is not able to dedicate more staff to at least do its statutory responsibilities, we think that the department should ask the legislature to limit its review, the department's review and approval authority, to online schools that enroll students or offer to enroll students full time. This is where we have the greatest concerns about student performance. It's the full-time online students. Finally, we think that the department should encourage school districts to participate in online learning consortia, which are groups of school districts coming together to offer online courses to member districts and to other districts, other students statewide. Interest in online learning is growing. It offers numerous advantages to students, and participating in a consortium can be a very cost-beneficial way to offer online students. Plus, teachers have access to a lot of materials and management tools that they may not otherwise have available to them. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions about our study. I also have two members from the team with me in the audience, Sarah De La Cueva and David Kirshner, and they might chime in if I stumble.
Thank you, Ms. Voss. And I know, Representative Myra, you worked closely with the Office of the Legislative Auditor. Representative Garland?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Voss. I'm happy to hear the report again, which I was excited about when it came out. I remember the response from the commissioner was a little reactionary and caught some comments from some of the members of the audit commission because of the, I think, her concerns about one more charge, maybe with not enough staff to do it. And so there's this conundrum, recommending more funding or more staffing, but then that always means we need more funding. And that's part of the fiscal note. Someone just sent me the fiscal note. So, Madam Chair, I'm definitely wanting this bill to go to the Finance Committee, because if we're going to discuss doing it right, I think we do have to discuss having the staff at the department as well as in the school districts to participate in the consortium or whatever. Most good ideas do cost something. And then my question for Ms. Voss is... one of your concerns, which I strongly share, is the full-time online learning students. Often they are like the students at Blue Sky, alternative type students who otherwise might be at alternative schools, and they have become pregnant and they're home with a baby, or they have had chemical dependency or mental health issues, and it's difficult to go to school full-time. I see these very same students that are at the online schools disproportionately being the ones that are also at alternative high schools. And we just had alternative high school day or week last week or the week before. Some of those students and their teachers visited with me, and the reason that the students talked about, every one of them, that why they were now successful where they hadn't been successful at their regular traditional high school was they had the personal attention of the teachers who were right there to help them, catch them, redirect them if they got lost, and they had been lost in the shuffle at their high school. So my concern is this part that Representative Myra has added into this bill that has nothing to do with the auditor's report of changing the role of the teacher. And it seems to me that would exacerbate the problems that we already do have with the full-time online learning students, where they are more apt to drop out, not complete, because they don't have that tender, loving care from a professional who's not just imparting information and the students can take it or leave it, but helping them and surrounding them with a real person who can do that. I see the ones who can do well with online learning, never mind if there's any teacher at the other end of the computer or not, as the gifted students, or at least the upwardly achieving students who can, they don't need a teacher or anything. If they're self-motivated, have good families, they're bright and all of that sort of thing. But could you comment?
Representative Greiling, I'm not sure that Ms. Voss should comment on that. That question's not relevant to the OLA report, and particularly Representative Myra's bill. I think that's putting her on the spot.
Well, Madam Chair, I beg to differ, and I would ask you to have her be able to answer my question. Since she did study this, she is concerned about the high dropout rate of the students at the full-time schools. I think it's very relevant.
Ms. Voss.
Madam
to the extent you can answer this.
Representative Greiling, I can say this. When we went out and we talked with a number of the online schools, and I have to say that they all do things differently. Mm-hmm. Some of the online schools offer blended courses right now where students are come to the regular school 3 days a week and do online courses 2 days a week. Other ones require students to come to the school maybe on a weekly basis. Some of the online schools, not all but some, sort of have they appoint a three-person team to each online student who registers. And one of those, not a teacher, not one of their teachers, but one is the school counselor. Another is just another adult at the school. And I forget who the third one is. But it's their job to sort of keep tabs on the students, call to make sure that they're getting what they need, not just in school, but I don't want to say in life. But if they're on Medicare, make sure that they're able, or Medicaid, make sure that they're getting the benefits that they deserve. And other schools don't have things like that. So it's sort of all over the map. There isn't just one sort of model that all online schools use.
Thank you, Ms. Voss. Are there others in the audience who want to testify in support of this bill? Thank you, Ms. Voss. Are there others in the audience who want to testify? Yes, Mr. Pearlstein. You only have a couple of minutes, so you have to get your thoughts together. Members, we have only till 9:15 because we have Representative Mariani's bill, and unless we want to come back tonight. Welcome to the testifying table. Please say your name for the record and begin.
I am Mitch Pearlstein. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm the founder and president of Center of the American Experiment, and while I do hold a doctorate in education from the University of Minnesota, I must admit, it was completed in the pre-electronic era. When it comes to government's essential role in funding education, the holiest of grails is significantly improving quality while simultaneously constraining costs. Suffice it to say, no level of government, in or out of Minnesota, can cite many successes in melding and achieving these two imperatives in elementary and secondary education. Yet without indulging in the kind of exaggerated expectations and claims frequently voiced in K-12 education, the case to be made is that of all reforms on the educational table, taking greater advantage of digital learning does, in fact, promise to help children learn measurably more without forcing taxpayers to spend measurably more. I'm hoping members of the committee received a copy of a report that we released on online learning, digital learning, a couple of weeks ago. So let me just pull one of the fine paragraphs. I say it's a fine paragraph because Ted Coldry is the oral author. We did two roundtables with about 15 quite distinguished Minnesota educators and others that led to this report. And Ted, as you know, one of the great education visionaries, said this at one point. 30 kids climb into a bus in St. Paul and head south on I-35, with the teacher on a mic pointing to various things out the window as they roll along. Some kid says, "I missed that. I was looking at something else. Can we go back over that again?" "No," the teacher says, "we can't stop and do that again." Another student says, "Gee, this is interesting. Can I explore it a little bit?" "No, we can't do that," the teacher answers again. And then a third student says, "I've been down this road before. Can't we go any faster?" "No, we can't do that either." Let's just say the lessons here about digital learning's core virtues are not hard to decipher. If kids need more time, Coldry noted in one of our roundtables, they can have more time and they should learn more because of it. where kids can go faster, they can go faster, and there should be achievement gains in that too. And it seems to me, this is Ted speaking, that's where huge potential lies. And ladies and gentlemen, I agree with our friend Ted Coldry. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Perlstein. Are there others in the audience? Please come forward. Very briefly, please, say your name for the record and begin your testimony.
I'm John Bacall. I'm part of a team starting one of Minnesota's first blended learning schools called Venture Academy in Minneapolis in the South Metro area. And Representative Benson, in the 80s, I took one of those AP courses distance from Hopkins High School that was taught at Edina.
My condolences.
Yeah. The question was raised earlier, Madam Chair and representatives, about whether there's anything currently that would get in the way of doing blended and quality blended and digital learning. And I just wanted to highlight a school in California called Rocket Ship Education, which has gotten remarkable results with under-resourced Latino and other children in the San Jose area, because they couldn't, it's not clear that they could operate that kind of model in Minnesota. It's a K-5 model. 6 hours of the day, the students are with licensed teachers who play an incredibly important role in the school we're planning to start and at Rocket Ship. But 2 hours a day, the kids, during the regular school day, which is longer, the kids are in something called Learning Lab. And that Learning Lab is not, there isn't a licensed teacher in the room because students are learning digitally, being reinforced in that instruction. They're being carefully supervised by a well-trained paraprofessional. And what that allows is for teachers to have more professional development time. And the savings allow teachers, which in California and Minnesota are not paid sufficiently, to receive additional compensation. One of the challenges in schools that are closing the achievement gap is there's teacher burnout can be a big problem. And when you provide, when you leverage the strengths of teachers to provide direct instruction and social-emotional support and counseling by having a paraprofessional in the room, that makes it a higher quality of experience for the educator. And I did consult with the Board of Teaching and with a lot of it, and members of the Board of Teaching, former and current, and with educators across the state. And in fact, even though the law is murky, a licensed teacher always must be in the line of sight of students during the school day when any learning is taking place, is sort of the accepted practice. And so a rocket ship model would not be possible. I just wanted to briefly mention that two of our team members, one is the Chief of Staff of Denver School of Science and Technology, Christine Nelson, a Minnesotan, who is a terrific leader in that school in Denver. I've been to as a terrific model of closing the achievement gap in a very innovative way. And then last month, the former superintendent of Brooklyn Center, Dennis Morrow, who back in the 80s when he was a principal pioneered the open enrollment law. And the members here around the table, you have been in the forefront of making Minnesota a hallmark, a leading innovation state, from open enrollment to post-secondary options to the charter law to the ALT certification, and particularly the site-based governing schools, and on a nonpartisan, bipartisan basis in all of these reforms. And what we're asking for is to have the allow a little more permissiveness, a clarity in the statute around the use of non-licensed personnel, not to replace teachers, but to leverage their capacity. Clearly, there's no proof points yet. There's no long-term longitudinal research yet. Nor was there on any of the reforms I mentioned. But you opened the door. There were those who talked to you and said this would destroy public education. And in fact, it strengthened public education in Minnesota. And let's study it. Let's examine it. Let's see how it works. I think there's only one other school in the state being proposed that would want to take advantage of this flexibility now, but at least the two of our schools would benefit from having some clarity in this year's session.
Thank you, Mr. Bacall. Tracy Kornstrom, are you in the audience? I know you're a director of an online school. Would you come forward, please, with your testimony? Welcome to the testifying table. Say your name for the record and please begin.
Tracy Kornstrom. I'm the director at the TRIO Wolf Creek Distance Learning Charter School. And I'm just here to support the bill from Representative Myra and thank her for her work in this area. I do work in the only 9 through 12 blended model in the state. We are a blended model high school, and our model allows for the majority of our students to work 1 or 2 days a week on campus and then other days a week in a digital setting. So about 20% of our students do work 100% online or in a digital world, and 80% of our students choose to come to campus. So we are geographically located in Chisago City, Minnesota. We serve approximately 150 students in grades 9 through 12. So I'm just here briefly. I know we have very little time to support the bill and say that we need to continue the discussion and definitely appreciate the elements that address the legislative audit to make sure that quality online programs can become providers through the Minnesota Department of Education and that that can happen in a timely manner so that those programs that want to serve students through quality can do that in a timely manner. So already from working with Representative Myra, I know that this is just the beginning of the discussion around digital learning. This is not the end of the discussion, and that a lot of things need to be discussed and continue to be contemplated in the future with so many different programs and different models around the state, which is the beauty of digital learning and choice in Minnesota. So thank you very much for your time, and I'll keep it brief.
Thank you very much. There are those in the audience who have concerns. Please come forward, express your concerns. Oh, we need one more speaker. You know, we have to balance this out, so please. Very briefly, say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Eugene Piccolo. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. We currently have 6 charter schools that are online programs, enrolling about 4,000 students. Mm-hmm. I just want to make comment on 4 provisions of the bill. First, we want to commend Representative Myra for bringing forth the legislation and incorporating some of the recommendations of the legislative auditor, including the process for approval and reapproval of digital programs. This is a critical component to ensure clarity and transparency in accountability process and ensuring quality offerings for our students. Second, we support the concept that all teacher education programs include knowledge and skills necessary for every teacher to deliver digital learning options with students they'd be teaching. We also encourage you to look at requiring that for all teachers, not just those entering the profession. Because without teachers, all teachers possessing the knowledge and skill sets, it's hard to see how we would have enough teachers available to meet the requirement that every student will need to take at least one course through digital learning format before graduation, beginning with students entering 9th grade in the fall of 2013. And the requirement for teacher candidates not going into effect until July 2014, which means they won't be graduating until about 2017 or 18. So I think there is a gap there in terms of having enough teachers having the skill set. We also commend that the legislation includes a definition of blended learning, as this will give us a minimum definition in Minnesota common parlance about this type of digital learning program, as there are currently several different definitions and meanings of this term used around the country. And finally, an important piece of the legislation is the report that would be presented back to this committee next January, recommending statutory and regulatory changes to effectively integrate technology in K-12 and post-secondary education. This is especially important because rules and laws have been written up to this point basically around bricks and mortar schools, and there's a different framework of thinking about online learning versus traditional bricks and mortar. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Piccolo. Now we can hear from those who have concerns. First, the department.
Good Morning, Madam Chair, members. First of all, I wanted to thank...
Please say your name for the record.
I'm sorry. I'm Darren Cordy. I'm with the Department of Education in their Government Relations Office. First of all, I wanted to thank Representative Myra for bringing this bill forward. She was kind enough to meet with Mr. McHenry and I yesterday and share the amendment with us at that time and walk us through it, which was very helpful. We are definitely supportive at the Department of expanding digital learning. We do agree that the future is going to most definitely include greater digital course offerings. We want to be supportive of the innovation that accompanies that. We did have a couple of concerns with the bill as it exists. Section 6, which some of these concerns have been brought up by members of the committee, Section 6 extends the opportunity for uncertified personnel to deliver digital instruction through both full-time and supplemental digital providers. Under this proposal, curriculum could be developed by an out-state vendor, assembled by a Minnesota-certified teacher, and then delivered by a paraprofessional or an outside teacher. The definition in this bill of supervised delivery is not provided, and therefore it could be assumed that the teacher's certified teacher's role could be minimized and could be difficult to monitor. Under Section 7, which includes some of the OLA recommendations, including the deadline to approve digital online provider applications within 60 days and then allow those that are disapproved one opportunity to address deficiencies. As Representative Greiling mentioned, our limited resources at the department do render it problematic to complete an application review efficiently within 60 days. And we're afraid that this would be prioritizing speed over quality. According to the OLA's recommendations, we are attempting to have more staff people addressing online learning issues. MD is currently hiring a full-time person to manage online learning specifically. In fact, the person who's currently managing our online learning area is Sally Weary, and she's actually interviewing candidates for that position today, and that's why she's unable to be here. We currently do have many certified online providers and options. There's definitely not a shortage of options in this state. Most class sections are small, and Minnesota students have multiple enrollment options. An increased number of online providers may have the opposite effect of forcing those with limited enrollments to close. At the same time, districts are developing their own programs, and this also further decreases the need for more and more providers. Additionally, MD has an ongoing dialogue with applicants throughout the process. Most applicants have required 2 or 3 revisions to their application with additional technical assistance provided during the process by the department. You need to remember that applicants are developing a school. They're not just developing a digital curriculum. And our final concerns lie with Section 8 and Section 10, which are similar to the provisions which exist in the Senate version of this bill. As we mentioned in the Senate hearing, we believe that working closely with the Digital Advisory Council is a good thing. But the process in this bill has major implications for the time and effort of the council. It reframes the work of this group from one of an advisory nature to the commissioner on a variety of online issues to one of a working task force charged with developing a product catalog. This has major implications in terms of time and funding. And the review process of the aligned K-12 curriculum across the content areas is an ongoing and large undertaking. The intent of the student and teacher feedback system is not exactly clear. Is it to rate curriculum? Is it to provide input on the catalog itself? And the recommendation to include student performance data may not be necessary once the Common Course catalog is fully operational. The Senate bill did generate a fiscal note, and I have not seen a fiscal note on this bill, but the fiscal note in the Senate did generate a general fund cost of $104,000 in 2013. Also, the department would need one FTE in FY12 for an education specialist to assist the council in developing a method for students and teachers to evaluate courses, study student performance data, researching and preparing the legislative report, and assisting families to find an appropriate online learning course. These costs would expire in would be only through 2013 because under statute the council expires in June of 2013. However, there would be a need for ongoing maintenance of the catalog, indexing, and evaluations would become the department's responsibility at that time, which the fiscal note states would require a 0.25 FTE annually.
Thank you, Mr. Carty, and I will change my motion to send it to finance. So, to allay all the fears of those who are so concerned, Representative Daphne.
Madam Chair, to that point, is the expected there's got to be microphone here somewhere. Is the expected path of the bill also to go to GovOps, given the significant
the
changes in the structure of the Digital Learning Advisory
Council? I guess that would be at the request of Representative Keffa. So once she reviews this, we'll see what she thinks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carty. Others who have concerns, Ms. Ballmer? Welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you. Good morning. I'll talk fast. Madam Chair, members, I'm Karen Ballmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. I don't know that I'm in the here in the opposed opposition to the bill camp. We are routing the language through my channels, the Board of Teaching, my legislative committee. So what I wanted to do at a minimum today is to just offer a few things, thoughts on comments that have been made and discussion that you've had already while we continue to ruminate on the bill and its implications for us. A couple things. One of the things you heard early on in terms of inputs versus outputs that really resonates with the direction of the Board of Teaching in general, and in fact that is what we are seeking to do with our teacher preparation programs, to move away from a view and approval of programs that is based on inputs, tell us your syllabi, tell us how many credits you have, and moving towards things like the teacher performance assessment that tells us something that's actionable, measurable, demonstrable, etc. So that concept itself is one that really resonates with where we are in our work in terms of teacher preparation in Minnesota. Now, specifically to the bill, I think the place where we, just so you know where our discussions are, it does lie in the portion of the bill that you've been discussing as it relates to the role of a licensed teacher, and specifically a Minnesota licensed teacher, in the delivery of instruction for kids. What we need to better understand right now is what you find later, just under that in Section 7, which is the approval process and the authorization for these online providers. We simply haven't been part of that work. I don't know, quite frankly, and it's not clear exactly from what's laid out on the top of page 7 what the criteria and expectations and standards are for the approval of such providers. So we, I would offer our sincere offer of support and collaboration to flesh that out and to see what that means. You've seen the models of what some providers look like, but what is the treatment of licensure from these providers? What is the view? What is the accountability if it's an out-of-state licensed teacher and their depth of content knowledge and depth of pedagogy and instructional strategies and so forth? So I just offer that as a way to sort of put a placeholder in for us that we're interested in this work. We would like to explore it further to really flesh out and get to the heart of some of what those implementation issues would be for us. So we would certainly be happy to continue working with you.
Certainly. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ballmer, and we'll make sure that Representative Myra works with you.
Thank you.
Others who have concerns. Jan Alsweiger, Education Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. Say your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alsweiger, Education Minnesota. My concerns are about quality and cost, and since the chair has indicated it will go to the Finance Committee, I won't touch those, and I think people have brought those up as well. I guess our main concern would be on the change from having a requirement of a teacher deliver the instruction to supervising the instruction. I mean, literally what that means, there aren't any limits on it, but what that means is that you could hire a licensed teacher for a social studies class and hire anybody with no qualifications required to actually be delivering the instruction. Now, I would hope that wouldn't be the case, but let me tell you about the irony here. You passed on the floor yesterday a bill to require a basic skills test, and yet we don't require that of these individuals. And there isn't a limit, so you could have one teacher who has taught past the basic skills test teaching math that wouldn't have any qualifications. In fact, you could have 20 of those people. There isn't any limit. And so I wonder how we think this would improve the instruction. And I would also say, in my experience teaching, it's much easier for me to have a handle on the kids in my classroom when they're physically present than it would be teaching online. In fact, even if I had my kids in a classroom and I had 29 of them or 35 of them, as in many of our classrooms now, even if I had 35 of them sitting at a computer doing online in the classroom, it is sometimes even, depending on what they're doing, more difficult to monitor that than it is when you can physically see them doing their work at their desk. So I think this is opening it up far more than people are intending. I've had some wonderful conversations with Representative Myra and her intentions and improving, getting technology into the classroom. I think that that's wonderful. Another thing is that I think it was in this body that there was a huge push on character development. And we even passed some laws that said that I think it's permissive and, you know, encouraging to develop character development. I have to say that my daughter is in elementary school, and I think she's benefiting from some of the discussions you had here. Why? Because she is physically present with a teacher who is trying to teach that character to her. It's the Greenleaf Cares model. And there's a lot more empathy, there's a lot more caring, respect, I believe, because of that. How do you do that through a computer? I'm sure you can get some encouraging words, but I know I see kids come back to their teacher and give them a hug because they were the best fourth grade teacher. And I don't know how you do with this with, maybe it works, I don't know.
Ms. Allzweiger, can you point to the language that you have a question about?
Line 6.11. A teacher holding a Minnesota license must assemble and supervise the delivery. The deliver is very important.
Thank you.
And teachers personally can give a hug, a tap on the shoulder to someone, and it makes a big difference. So we are supporting online learning. There is a place and a time for it. But this expands it, and I think before we do that, we should get some of those quality issues in control. Thank you.
Representative Mariani, just a minute, Ms. Allzweiger. I think Representative Mariani has a question for you.
Madam Chair, I'll try to be excuse me. I'll try to be very quick. And I do have a 6 o'clock Valentine's Day dinner scheduled with my wife. And anyone who tries to schedule Valentine dinners, you know, you have to book those out like a month ahead of time. So I will not be here. So Roger, if our bill is up, you're on your own, pal.
We're going to honor your date, Representative Mariani.
Thank you. I will let my wife know that.
You're in finance, too, so you can ask more questions there.
Well, you know, Madam Chair, I have to say, honestly, Representative Mariani, I like your bill. I spent some time with some of the advocates. I think this is the direction. I think we're going to have to bite off on some sort of unknowns here for us that are new, but I think it's inescapable that we have to embrace a whole new delivery system based on, you know, the era that we live in. Having said that, I have to say I'm very concerned with the language on page 6.
Okay.
And I would prefer, Madam Chair, that we really vet that language out in this committee and not in the Finance Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to move this bill forward, then I honestly, I don't think we should move this bill forward at this point with that language. And so, Madam Chair, I would move to amend House File 2127 by striking the language, a new language on lines 6.2 to 6.4, and striking the new language on 6.10 through 6.13, and reinstate the stricken language.
Representative Mariani has moved that we restore the present law in those areas. Discussion.
And Madam, Madam Chair, this is not meant as a hostility to this concept, not at all. I'm actually very open to this idea. I just think this deserves much more careful deliberation in this committee and not in the Finance Committee.
Representative Myra.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, I would agree with you. I would be fine with that.
So you will accept this as a friendly amendment?
I will.
Thank you, Representative Myra. Representative Greiling, I think we have others who have been waiting. So are there others with concerns? So this has been accepted as a friendly amendment. The School Boards Association? Yes? No? The amendment has been accepted as a friendly, so.
Well, Madam Chair, so for the record, she's incorporating that change.
Yes, I'm sorry. Representative Myra incorporates your oral amendment. And why don't we have Ms. Larson repeat it, just for the record, so we have it right.
Madam Chair, members, on the document H2127DE4 on page 6, line 3, delete must supervise but need not be physically present for and reinstate deliver. On page 6, line 4, delete the delivery of. On page 6, line 11, delete supervise the delivery of and reinstate deliver. And on page 6, line 12, delete but is not required to be physically present during the. And on page 6, line 13, delete delivery of that instruction. And Madam Chair, may I abuse of this opportunity to make a technical change?
Yes, please, Ms. Larson.
Thank you. On page 7, line 8, please strike this and after paragraph insert parens a parens. And on page 7, line 10, strike B and insert D. And on page 7, line 21, strike certification.
So having heard all of this, members, I think it's best that we vote on this. Are there questions about what Ms. Larson has asked for in technical changes? Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just a little concerned about your resistance to call on me, and I just have to express that. But so that's longer.
Well, I have a lineup here, Representative Greiling.
That's longer than what I was going to say. It's what I was going to say now, which would have been much quicker to just call on me, is thank you to Representative Myra for accepting the advice of this committee. That's exactly what I was talking about earlier. Take out this one piece, and then I think we can be very supportive of the rest. So thank you, Representative Myra.
So members, all of those in favor of incorporating Representative Mariani's oral amendment and the technical changes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and that is adopted language. Mr. Schneiderwind, please say your name for the record and
yes.
Begin your testimony.
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneiderwind with the Minnesota School Board Association, and the issue. I'll be very brief and understand Representative Mariani's issue in front of him. So, the issue for us is on the bottom of page 1 is the fact that it's going to require school districts to offer the digital learning, and I don't disagree with anything that was said to here in terms of college and career readiness, and this is where we need to go. And the discussion, though, I just want to piggyback a little bit on Representative Norton's comments, is that the marketplace, I mean, this is one of the issues where school boards and school districts are trend. I mean, they are absolutely hungry for this and absolutely working to find solutions at a local level to require this. And I think you look at Matamidi and their Fab Lab where they incorporate engineering and digital delivery and all of that done without a state requirement. And I think that you need to consider that as this thing moves forward. And I think that the issue of capacity is another one. And I think that while Matamidi and other districts may have the initiative by their board and their community and their business leaders to move forward on this, that might not be the case in other districts. I mean, the other districts may not have the capacity or the revenue to go ahead and move forward with this. So I think when you move down this one-size-fits-all, I think you need to consider some of those issues perhaps that may be in the outstate that may not have the technical capacity or the instructional capacity to do that. So I'll just leave that as that, and I look forward to working with Representative Myra on these issues.
Thank you. Representative Kath.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Myra, that was my concern, too, on page 1. You've already taken care of the questions on page 6. But, you know, I guess I would ask you to consider, instead of saying high school students must receive at least one digital, how about high school students must be offered at least one? So, in other words, when you're looking at this, it's about an opportunity for a district to offer those courses and to get them all in the same playing field of saying that they must step into that delivery system rather than saying that for one size fits all that every student must actually take one. I look at at some IB schools that I've been chatting with who are saying that this would be very hard for the IB diploma plus two music students if you're in an orchestra and a choir. There are some concerns here about some of those courses that wouldn't be offered or be able to be offered digitally. And I don't know if you've talked to an IB school about this, but those are some of the things that they're going to look at for some of this. But maybe to look at it from the onset of saying to the district, you must offer at least something rather than then it's a requirement may alleviate some of those problems.
Representative Myra.
The requirement starts next year, and it's for ninth graders, and they won't be graduating until 2016. There's quite a long time, and research is showing this whole area is exploding. Ms. Staker had talked about by 2019, 50% of our courses being digital, and so. And I don't know if any of you have students that are in college. It is imperative that they have an understanding of digital learning before they go on campus. And I think this is a basic requirement. And I would like to keep that in, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Myra. Seeing no others to testify, other questions from members? Representative Barrett.
Thank you.
I know
Thank
I've been ignoring you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm not the only one.
It's balanced.
No. Well, since first raising my hand prior to Representative Greiling,
I know your name's way up on the list. I know.
I've developed a couple more. Yeah. First, I wanted to just commend Director Kornstrom for coming down today. She is director of Wolf Creek Online Learning in Chisago County, and they provide a very valuable service to the kids, not only in the county, but you get kids they get kids from all over the state. And I especially want to do that in light of the testimony by Education Minnesota that talked about the somehow not showing love and caring. I couldn't disagree with that more. I went to the graduation ceremony at Wolf Creek last spring, and I saw nothing but love and caring from both the kids and the faculty. I heard many stories from kids who, for whatever reason, did not succeed in normal learning, and they found a home there. They found people who cared about them, and they found an outlet so that they could actually succeed in education. Yeah. And that is due to the direction of Director Kornstrom. So I want to commend her from that and just say that I was there, and I know what you guys are doing, and you're doing a great job. In an unrelated question, testimony from the Minnesota Department of Education talking about 60 days being a unnecessary or unreasonable time frame, that's already a time frame according to their guidelines. According to, and I'm looking at the OLA report online now, according from January 1st, 2010 to June 30th, 2011, MDE received 8 applications to establish online schools. They only reviewed 3 of those in the year and a half time frame. Some were close to the end of the period. They had one that was there for over a year, and they didn't review that. So they already have a 60-day process. They're just not following it, according to the OLA report. The third one, and it's due to the performance summary, performance concerns outlined by the OLA report. You know, numbers are a tricky thing. You know, they may appear one way, but they're really, in actuality, could be something else. The bullet point where they mentioned 25% of the kids in 12th grade dropped out compared with 3% statewide. Hypothetical situation. Let's say 100% of these kids dropped out of normal learning, and so they came into the online learning setting and only 25% dropped off. That would be a tremendous improvement. Even if 50% came in, even if 26%, going down to 25 is an improvement. You can't compare 25% of those kids in online learning to the 3% in normal population. It just is an unfair comparison. And rather than spend a lot of time on that, I will just say that as probably a pretty valid fact. And so we need to be careful with performance concerns when we use bullet points to describe what is a very difficult and complex issue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Barrett. Representative McFarland, did you want to ask a question?
No, I just basically wanted to make a comment, if I could. Two things. I was up in Nashwauk and observed the classroom that Cisco and Blandon Foundation have with, and had the teacher from Deer River teaching the class in Nashwauk.
a student would just even wiggle in their desk and the teacher was immediately on it. Mm-hmm. It's a lot different than what used to be. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of potential for those areas where they don't have a lot of economies of scale for having students in those subject areas. So it's a great opportunity. I've also observed a third grade classroom where there's a lot of blended technology. And to say that the kids aren't being nurtured, yes, Representative Mariani's been there. I know Carmen Carter's been there. Mm-hmm. I think, Pam, did you go there too? Anyway, a lot of people have gone to visit this classroom. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of nurturing going on, but there's also a lot of digital learning happening. And the kids are able to test ideas and test their answers, and nobody is judging them. That's right. And so they can make mistakes without that judgment, and they learn a lot, and their achievement has gone up greatly. So I really do support, especially the blended digital technology.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Okay, Representative Myra, closing comments. We will hear Representative Mariani's bill. Well, maybe we could hear it today. We'll see. Closing comments, Representative Myra, and I think you know what the concerns are, and hopefully we can work on those as the bill progresses. Closing comments.
Madam Chair and members, with my learning difficulties as a young child, I was very concerned about the education of my children. And so, as I have mentioned in this committee before, I home educated them. It was a wonderful experience. I was able to tailor their education to their learning styles. I was able to mentor them one-on-one. And they did not go on to the next lesson unless they had passed the previous one and done it well. And in talking to many parents and teachers over the last decade, they have lamented that they have not been able or cannot give that same level of education to their children. I'm so excited about digital learning because that's exactly what you can do through digital learning. We can free teachers from content delivery and assessment and allow them to be mentors and coaches and help students that are having difficulty. It gives strengthens effectiveness in the classroom. I hope you will support my bill by voting yes. Thanks so much.
So, members, with that said, the motion is to move a House File 2127 as amended, recommended to pass, and be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and this bill is on its way to K-12 Finance. And Representative Mariani, we'll wait, unless you think you can do it in 8 minutes. Mr. Arnson, come on down. Let's do her. Thank you, Representative Mariani. Then you can have a really nice Valentine. Members, this is House File 1524, and I will move to have that before us, and Representative Mariani will make his motion in regard to where it's going to go. Welcome to the committee, Representative Mariani, and if you'll move your bill, please.
Madam Chair, I would move House File 1524 be recommended to pass and refer to the House floor.
General Register, thank you. Representative Mariani does move 1524 to pass and to be placed on the General Register. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I'll have Mr. Arnson explain it.
Thank you. Mr. Arnson, you're here.
Madam
Say your
Chair,
name
members,
for the record.
We appreciate the committee's indulgence to hear this today. This bill was introduced a year ago. I'm happy to say it is in the same form that it was introduced. This is to parallel up the substitute principal requirements with those of teachers. So when individuals are retired and districts have a need to pick someone up for a very short time, while teachers have different continuing ed requirements, the principals have the old continuing ed requirements, which are 125 hours every 5 years. So this would allow individuals who didn't have the full 125 hours to come in and serve on a substitute basis. As you can see from the language, it's no more than 15 consecutive school days. Staff put this together for us to parallel it up with the teacher requirement. We have several schools that this would help very much. They don't have to hire someone then with a license on the short-term basis. And the state law is such that if you have a principal that is in charge of the school, that individual has to have a license. So it's a nice little bridge. I can tell you that I don't know of anyone that has any opposition to it. That's why I was reasonably confident we could do it in the 8 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. Are there any questions? Hearing none and seeing no hands, I will renew Representative Mariani's Motion that House File 1524 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and 1524 is on its way to the House floor. Thank you, members. Have a nice Valentine. Remember, Thursday we have a joint meeting. We'll be hearing the waiver from the department. And meeting's adjourned.